Guess what, Bango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
Well, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
Each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, hello, you nerdy nerds. This is Let's Talk About Myths, baby, and I am your host, Liv. Today, I am here with a fun and silly and deeply freewheeling conversation with Michaela Smith, who, for the last year, has worked with me to bring you all this podcast. As I say at the end of every episode, Michaela handles so many things and has helped immensely, immeasurably with the Spartan series specifically. Like, for real, it would not have existed without her. So we thought, why not talk about it? We recorded this conversation about, like, broadly what it was like to research Sparta for this series. But of course, we also just talked about lots of other random ancient Greek things as they related to our research, and sometimes as they did not relate remotely to our research, but were fun and interesting all the same. This is a ridiculously casual episode with lots of tangents and rambling, but it's fun. And if you want more content, it is the perfect way to have a look at what has gone into the Spartan series and a bit more about what goes into every episode of this podcast. I will just say that in editing the episode, I noticed a couple references to Turkey, just in reference to ancient locations. But I want to make sure I acknowledge that this was recorded before the absolutely devastating earthquakes that occurred earlier this week. I'm thinking of everyone in Turkey and Syria right now. If you are a listener from that area, oh my God, stay safe. Earthquakes are terrifying. This is the bonus episode. Researching Sparta was a trip. Behind the scenes with Michaela Smith. This is a really casual episode in which I'm literally just talking to Michaela. We're going to try to not go completely off topic because half the time we talk, we just talk about our pets. But this is work talk. Not that when we talk about our pets, it's not technically on work hours anyway. But that's why this is a bonus episode. So we are talking today with Michaela, who is my, I never want to say assistant because it sounds weird. So we call her the Hermes to my Olympians, but like ultimately, like in terms of, I mean, she's a research assistant, assistant. I don't know, everything. The only employee I have.
You could, Lupin could be an employee.
That's true.
Yeah, totally. I don't know what he'd do. Oh, general manager.
There we go. All right. That means I could pay him and then I would have double the money. Is that a thing?
Well,
it's all still my money. I mean, it's literally my. I always joke like using my business credit card and I'm like, I'm the only person who owns this business. It's just my credit card. But I'm like, somehow it's different when I spend my business money.
Yeah, you got to keep the receipts this time, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom's been making me do that forever. Oh, gosh.
Oh yeah. No.
Well, anyway, that's why this is a bonus episode, because it's going to be very casual, fast and loose with everything. But basically, Michaela has done all of the research for this series on Sparta, so much of it. It helped in large part by the fact that she is going to university and has access to things like JSTOR and beyond. So thank the gods for that. But yeah, so we just thought we'd talk about like how we did the research for this, or like weird stuff we learned about Sparta. Yeah, so I don't know. Why don't you tell me what it was like to do a bunch of research for me, Michaela?
Like, I had this day like a month into it where I called my mom, because sometimes I don't know,
sometimes you gotta battled, call
yeah. I'm just like, Nancy, please set me straight. And I'm just like, I'm just reading things and making notes, and she's like, yeah, that sounds like research. I'm like,
yeah,
cool. Yeah. I'm like, it feels wrong because I do this for fun. And she's like, no now it's gonna be stressful. And I was like, great.
Story of having a podcast. You take the thing that has always been the thing you do for fun and you make it stressful. Not to say that I don't still have fun, but like it is considerably more different when it is also the thing that pays my bills.
Yeah. And this is why I didn't go to school for piano, because I was like, no, I enjoy this too much.
Let's yeah, don't ruin it.
Yeah, and it's why I was so happy to like no longer work with dogs, because it was like, there was a day I was walking Zoe and I was just like, this feels like work. I don't like this. Oh no. No. And now walking her is just a chore, because it takes her 30 minutes to like walk the lengths of like two houses. She's like, I'm old, leave me alone. But she's been the assistant to the research assistant, and it's just been a lot of like thinking of keywords. oh my God, keywords. Mm-hmm. Like, how specific can I get? Visiting so many libraries, I am so thankful some days. Like, there's some great things about being Indigenous and, like, this beautiful amount of, like, guilt some places have. Because, like, UBC is just like, if you are Indigenous, you get a free library card. And I'm like, oh, I've saved $70.
Yeah.
Yay.
That's sweet. We're just, like,
hanging out in UBC. Just like, yeah. Cool. Reading in the stacks. I'm going to learn this.
Well, one of the things I think is, like, both so interesting and so frustrating about Sparta is this, like, lack of Spartan sources. We've talked about it on the show. And so, but also, like, a lack of Spartan sources, but then there's the question of, like, you know, how the other sources are influenced. But even still, like, so for instance, I was just recording the mythology episode that will have aired by the time this one comes out. And, you know, I wanted to talk about the myth characters that are so important in Sparta. But for the most part, like, well, we definitely don't have Spartan sources for these myths.
None.
But they're, nothing at all. But then they're super famous characters in the broader history of Greece and mythology and stuff. So it's so interesting to navigate. And then, like, I wanted to talk a lot about the Heraclidae, the return of the children of Heracles. But the primary source for that is Euripides. So it's like, well, no, like, one, I don't have time to cover a play right now. But two, that's an Athenian play written by an Athenian. Like, I think it's probably written, like, during the Peloponnesian War, if not, like, shortly before or after. Like,
which play?
Heraclidae.
I'm so bad with the plays. But yes, I
mean,
know how it
was. Based on it's got to be, like, somewhere in and around that time period. Because that's when Euripides is alive. And so,
yeah, that's true. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and so it's just like, I'm not going to use that play to tell the story because that feels irrelevant. I'm gonna tell it one day for sure because it's Euripides. But yeah, trying to navigate that and then still get all the bits and pieces out that need to be shared, it's fascinating, and I think it's making for both interesting and frustrating episodes for listeners and us.
I mean that's, like, the thing though that you learn once you start studying, like, you know, either the ancient Mediterranean or history in general, is sources, especially when you go back so far and you're looking at Greek and Roman sources, is there's, like, none. We have so little. Like, my professor was talking about it in my Rome class the other day, and she was saying, like, we have something like 3% of what the Romans actually wrote. That's nothing.
And that's, like, Rome, which is, like, we have more from Rome than we do from Greece. So, God, that's painful to think about.
Mm-hmm. There's so much that's gone. Like, if you ever, maybe it's not a great suggestion, but, like, Athenaeus. I think of a later source. But he has, like, random citations all throughout these things. And so that's how we know some sources that we don't have, which is fantastic. But it's also so painful because you're just like, no, please, I want to beat that.
Yeah, I mean, I think of people like, I feel like Simonides is not necessarily in the same way. He's definitely partially like that. But Pherecydes is who I'm thinking of. Pherecydes is, like, this ancient mythographer. He wrote a ton of stuff. He was a big epic poet. We know he wrote so much, and we don't have his stuff. We have, like, references to it, like a line here or there that somebody quoted, or, like, so we know that he wrote about all this stuff, but we don't know what it is. And that is both so fascinating and so infuriating all at the same time. And this, like, it's just utterly wild. And then, like, that exists for all of the ancient world. And then, adding to it this idea that, like, not only is that true for Sparta, but also, like, you know, most of the sources that do survive are biased towards Athens. Most of the scholarship that has been done on all of those sources for the last 2,000 years is biased towards Athens. And then on top of all that, Sparta was secretive. You're like, the recipe for disaster.
Well, that's... We got most of our sources from Athens because, like, that's what everyone, like, even in antiquity, they were like, Athens became, like, the cultural center of Greece when Rome came.
But they also, I think, just wrote things down more, right? Like, I think they also just, like preserved more things. Whereas Sparta was probably, they focused more on the oral storytelling, and thus we just don't end up having it.
Yeah, and you know, I think it could be that partially, and I also just think it's, like, the unfortunate thing of we just don't know. Because Sparta didn't leave much behind. Like, even, like, they were, I think we've talked about this in some of the episodes of We Will, or We, I don't know. But it was like the Thucydides quote, where it was like, you would never know if you went to and you saw the remains of Sparta. You would never know that they were such a powerhouse, because there's nothing there. Like, they didn't do monumental building the way Athens did it. But Athens is like, you know, they just, it's an entirely different cultural ethos. They're still very Greek. Like, it's hard to describe, because I'm like, it's all Greek in the end. But then you get to know each of the city-states, and it's like, they're so different. It's, I think of them in my head like siblings, you know? Not twins, siblings. And they all love to fight amongst each other. But if somebody else comes in, they'll be like, wait, wait, let's just pause our fighting to, like, fuck this one person up, because how dare they mess with us? And then that person leaves, and then they go back to their fighting. And so it's like, they all resemble each other, but they're all very, very different and unique themselves.
Yeah.
Because, like, Athens, so much monumentalization. Like, let's just build everything. It's great. And we'll make everybody else pay for it, too. Like, we're not going to pay for it. We'll get all our money from the Delian League, because it's supposed to stop Persia again, but we're going to build our Acropolis.
Well, I think it also all comes down to this, like, idea that you have until you're really deep in the studying of the history, like, this overarching idea of Greece as a place, right? Like, we just, it's really hard to wrap your head around what it was like back then, because now we think of these places as, like, full comprehensive countries, you know, whereas, they weren't at all united. Like, there were different city-states that united with other ones, but that also changed over time, and, you know, everyone was so different. They had connections between them. I've just recently talked a little bit about, like, the four tribes, too. So they were, like, united by these certain things, but they were still ultimately, like, really different city-states with really different values and cultural ethos and, like, so many different things that made them completely different from one another. But now we look at it as this kind of one place, and then that just, it just adds to this, like, ever-growing confusion about what exactly was going on, you know, there, everywhere, depending on what region you're talking about and what time period too. And
it's because they're so, like, they're very, they all they have, like, the identifiers, so they have, like, their cultural sort of, like, backing of what it is to be Greek, to be of that area. So they have, like, their shared cultural history in terms of, like, mythical history, I guess. And then they have, like, a shared language, shared sort of, like, spirituality, religion, whatever you want to call it. But then other than that, it's like they didn't have much contact with each other growing up, because Greece is not an easy place to just walk around. It's really hard. There's, like, this tons of mountains and everything, so unless you're getting on sea and, like, moving around the ocean, it's hard to leave and interact with people in different areas.
Well, and add to that, like, the islands and how much distance there is in between them. And then because there was no, you know, channel in the isthmus, like, you also had to navigate, if you're going by sea, you had to navigate all the way around the Peloponnese. Like, that, it's just such a, it's such a monstrous, like, undertaking to get anywhere.
It's a bit of a chore.
It's a chore now, and it's like with ferries and planes, and still it's like, God, I want to go to this part of Greece, but it's the opposite end of the other part I want to go see.
It's like, you know, I guess it's, like, similar to BC in a sense. Like, have you ever tried driving through BC?
No, thankfully.
Fucking forever.
We're very big. Oh, I mean, we're bigger than Greece.
Dude, my mom and my sisters and I drove across, not all the way across Canada, to Lake Huron to go to Wiki. And it was like BC was like 20 hours to get from the lower mainland to Alberta. And then it's like you get to Saskatchewan and you're through it in like 6 hours. And you're like,
oh. Well, and then Ontario, you spend 4 days driving through Ontario if you make it all the way through. Oh my God.
It's just because of the natural environment. And that's sort of like, I think one of the things that people don't consider too much or think too much when they think about Greece is they don't really realize just how disjointed and disconnected everybody was from each other and how that affects them as they're growing up, which is why we look at these individual city-states over a whole civilization compared to, you know, well, kind of. And those
we try to. Greece,
fingers crossed. And also, Greece was all over the place, too. You know, like, the Greeks weren't just in modern Greece.
Yeah.
They were everywhere too because they had no resources. They had to leave. Like, they couldn't feed all the people, so they sent people out there and they were colonizing up and down the Mediterranean because that's what you do, I guess. And it's just, that's, I think, just one of those things that, like, you don't really realize until you kind of get deep into the study of it. So it's like you miss out on these, like, sort of like the geographical or like how your space affects your culture and how it's going to develop, as well as like just how sad the sourcing problem is.
Yeah.
And just how painful it is, because it's like, man, we're getting nobody's perspective. Like, we're getting barely any. Who can we trust? I don't know, man. I just had to read some Hesiod for class, and I was just God, he's so grumpy, man. Like, this, someone just give him like a cake and pat him on the back and be like, you're doing good, it's okay. Just give him some reassurance so he can take a break. He's such a jerk. But like, that's the thing. Like, those are the sources we have, and we have to work within the confines, which is why, you know, using other, like, different fields of study is great. I love talking to the archaeologists that I've met because they're so much fun. And they're like, look at this plate I found. And you're like, good job. It's beautiful. And you just, you learn, I love what archaeologists find. They make me so happy.
Oh, yeah.
Do I want to do it? I don't know. So I have bad knees. I can't think. So, and then that's hard because like Sparta didn't leave much. So it's just like from all around, Sparta's just like, you know, flipping us off, being like, you cannot know anything. And you're like, I would really love to, please.
Well, and I think one of the things that blew my mind the most in, and I learned this through talking to the guests for the show, and like the I've mentioned it kind of in those episodes, but I recorded those episodes in the summer. I think you had started doing research. I had not looked at it yet because I was too busy with everything else from the podcast. So I recorded those episodes with the guests without any background knowledge, like, at all. And that was kind of great, honestly, because I think often I like to play the role of like the person listening and the things that they're learning in the moment too. But one of the things that really blew my mind is just this idea that like a lot of what we do think about Sparta, they wanted us to think like it wasn't true. And we don't necessarily have like archaeological evidence for it. We just have like sources that were learning whatever Sparta wanted them to learn, and like completely influenced not by necessarily what was actually happening in Sparta, except for maybe Xenophon, but like what Sparta wanted people to think. And this idea that like after Thermopylae, which like I already knew kind of the more truth of Thermopylae, but the idea that like after Thermopylae, they basically looked at what happened, looked at how they were treated, and they were like, ooh, actually, things would be really, really good for us in the broader world if people thought that this is how we played the game. Like, if they thought that we were this brave and, like, you know, I mean, they died. Like, let's not pretend that they didn't all die at Thermopylae, but, like, this idea that they were willing to sacrifice it all, that, you know, 300 Spartans stood up against what they call millions of Persians. Like, obviously it's seen, you know, as a kind of success, even though it wasn't, because like that is inherently impressive if you were to believe what people are saying about it. Of course, we get into it and it's like, most of that is exaggerated, if not outright false, right? There were way more than 300.
Yep.
So many more, let alone all the Helots. And then also there were definitely not millions of Persians, no question.
No. It's like my favorite, reading the Persian numbers. You're just like, okay, sure, I'll let you. You
like, yeah, you can
that.
Believe that. Okay. Yeah, yeah, one of the things
be
that.
Nice.
One of the things that blew my mind talking to Rule for the episode we did on like the warfare and all of that aspect is like that one, Herodotus seems to have presented this idea that they like actually counted them really carefully and thus should be really accurate. But also, like, if there were as many Persians as they say, there would have been a column of Persian army like stretching all the way to Turkey And still and reaching Greece, but still in Turkey, because like how many people apparently were there? And you're like, okay, this is physically impossible.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting. But like, but yeah, I mean, to go back to the whole idea of like basically Sparta seeing the result of all of this and the way they were respected and feared, they were like, okay, we're going to run with this. Like, we are going to make like this our identity. This will benefit us. Like, fewer people will want to go to war with us. We will have a higher advantage when we do go to war because they're going to be inherently afraid and think that we're going to be better than we are. And like all these different fascinating things. But the idea that they did it on purpose is what I love so much.
It's actually kind of genius.
It is. It's brilliant. You know,
like, it's like, I don't think they were particularly good at fighting compared to the rest of the Greeks, quite frankly. I don't think they were anywhere near impressive. I just think they were really smart about how they did things. And, like, that served them great. Like, they became essentially, like, the head of Greece for some time, a short period of time.
Yeah, but they, still, I mean, they did it, though.
But we remember it. And it's like we remember it so clearly and everything. And like it, even in later times, like Alexander comes in, Philip comes in, and Alexander comes in, and they're like messing around with the Greeks, trying to get it under Macedonian control. And Sparta's like, no, I will not be Macedonian. And they kind of are like, all right, you can kind of just chill there. And they let them stay. Like, the rest of the Greece joins with them, but they leave Sparta, which says, like, it says a couple things. Like, obviously, Sparta wasn't a threat at that point.
I was going to say, yeah, it mostly says they were not a threat, but, like but still. Like,
you're looking at them going, oh, you're so cute. Look at you go. But, like, it's just fascinating.
Yeah.
And Sparta does that, and I think it's quite, like, it's quite genius.
I mean, obviously. It worked for them. Yes.
Yeah. And that's what's, like, that's the thing, isn't it? If it works for at least for a bit, why not? Why not let people believe that, I guess, especially at that time? Not so much now. Don't please. Have some. But, like, it's the ancient Greek world. They were so ridiculous. So you gotta kind of just laugh at it all. And ridiculous is an understatement, honestly. But I know I was trying to remember a professor had told me this. I'm gonna be saying that a lot because I'm quite deep into it, but a professor had told me that there was one point in the Persian War where Sparta was like, why don't we just build a wall like across the isthmus and like block Attica?
Like,
keep the Peloponnese
What are they gonna do? Like, we're gonna come by water, guys.
It's not the smartest idea. No. But it's so funny. It's just sort of like, you know what? Let's just abandon them to the Persians. And it's like, whoa. Okay. I can understand some resentment from Athens' side towards everybody else if that's your suggestion. You're just like, leave them to burn. Good God. But
I'm gonna assume this is before the Battle of Salamis, which I think would have proved like what a bad, like, or not bad idea so much as like useless. What a pointless idea.
That's the thing with Sparta, though, is like, I don't think they were particularly geniuses. I think they stumbled into a lot of things really well. Mm-hmm. And when they saw an opportunity, like, they were opportunistic almost. Mm-hmm. They saw an opportunity, they ran with it, which is, and it worked for them for the most part. But then you get little bits like that and you're just like, what? How is that gonna work in the long run? And like, it just makes you look bad within the wider like political sphere, I guess. Like, nobody's gonna take you seriously after that, but you know.
Yeah.
So,
well, one of the other things that surprised me so much in talking to guests about this is the idea that they also like really avoided war as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you bring in the idea that like they did it primarily so that they could make sure that they were home to keep their helots in line, but also just this idea that they basically like built up such a view around them as being so scary in battle that they could avoid battle entirely, like avoid proving or disproving it as much as humanly possible. But they also had so many like I forget which guest and how exactly they phrased it, but it was like this idea of like, you could call them allies, but really they were like working for Sparta. Like it didn't go both ways. Like they had so many regions like that. They were kind of like under their thumb in a really specific way, and that like they would defend Sparta, but Sparta was not expected to defend them back.
Yeah.
And just, yeah, the way they made that work for themselves is so interesting. And while, yeah, I mean, it's like, it is brilliant in its own way, but you're right. I do think it's also like they stumbled into some of it. They thought up some of it. I also think that they had a really, I don't want to say good, but I think they had a really interesting sense of self-preservation that I think worked really well in some ways and really not really well in other ways. Population.
So, like, I love Sparta, and I've always loved Sparta. Like, I think they're fascinating, and I like laughing at things especially. So if I find something that has, like, it's easy to laugh at it, I run with it. I'm like, this is great. Get some giggles in. But I don't know. Have you seen Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery?
I sure have.
Okay. Do you remember at the point where they're like, oh my God, the whole plan is a genius? And Blanche's just like, no, it's just dumb. It's just stupid. That is how I feel about Sparta, where it's just like, you look at it and you're like, oh my God, it's so
brilliant on the outside.
But they just stumbled into it. And you're just like, oh, okay. They're just like, in ways, it's like there's some, I think they're smart to a degree, but I also think they're just really opportunistic. They took their chances when they got it. I mean, because they're not even in like, thinking about like where they are in the Peloponnese, like, they're in an okay spot. They're kind of inland from everything. Like,
yeah. And they're
especially
like,
with the Helots, like, what are they going to do?
Well, yeah. I mean, their location is interesting because, I mean, they're kind of tucked in, but they are compared to, say, Achaea or something, like, they're pretty, you know, close to the sea to an extent, but they are just kind of, I mean, also I would like to say, and I say this too much, and like it probably really makes me seem less smart than I actually am, but I do base a lot of my memory points on how much I have played Assassin's Creed Odyssey, so
okay.
The map that I am picturing, I know you'll think it's okay, but I know that. It's everyone map, else. Man. It's a great map, and I have it memorized, so... If I need to know where something is, I just have to think about that. And if it's not in the Assassin's Creed Odyssey map, well, then I'm going to have to Google it. So here we are.
Fair.
But yeah, that's all to say, like, it is an interesting location that they're in. And
yeah,
I don't know. It's generally, it is fascinating to think about. And I think even with Thermopylae, like, it's a good example of what you're saying, of like kind of stumbling into it, because it's not like, I mean, not that they would necessarily set out to think like, if we sacrifice all of our people, we'll be able to use it to our advantage. But yeah, basically like everyone died, including one of their kings.
Yeah.
Like it didn't go well.
Yeah.
And you know, all of the things about like, not, you know, I think of the movie 300 because I think that's where a lot of people, at least in North America, like get their ideas for what for what the Spartans were all about. And like, a lot of it, sorry.
Can I just like pipe in real fast? Because I don't know if you know this yet. I still have never watched 300.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm so jealous.
I fall asleep when movies get turned on. Like within like 10 minutes, I'm passed out unless it's like certain movies. But
okay, so I'm fascinated then. This is great. I actually love this so much because I think, and I think a lot of people are going to be annoyed with how much I have brought it up because it is my whole reference point.
But it is most people's. Like,
well, I hope that's true, but I don't know. The number of people that got snippy at me because my reference point for Atlantis was Disney, and they were like, oh my God, she has no idea what she's talking about. I'm like, well, yeah, I'm kind of playing that role of like the every person. Like, chill out. That's the point. I'm not saying I'm not that.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto?
Also, what happened to Esperanto? Plus, we cover questions like how Chinese is your Chinese food, how do dollar stores stay in business, and of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
Well, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
So each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, and so if you haven't seen 300, like, what are your reference points on Thermopylae? Like, what did you think about it before going to school? Like, what is your whole deal there?
Okay, so, yeah, so me, what my reference for Thermopylae and Spartans and Greece in general, if I haven't, like, sort of experienced that much. So I am indigenous, and when we were younger, My mom did her best to try to keep us involved in things as much as possible. The thing is, I grew up on the West Coast, and I'm not a West Coast First Nations person. I'm Anishinaabe, so it's out east, out Great Lakes region. And so, like,
there's a secret level, secret bit of Indigenous history of Canada in this episode, and I like it.
Man, my grandma just got upset when all her kids were, like, moving out here, so she just packed up, like, my mom and the younger kids and moved everyone out here too. And now I grow up out here and people are like, you're First Nations, what are you, Musqueam? And I'm like, no, Anishinaabe, Odawa. And they're like, what is that? I'm like, that's not what we're talking about. It's fine. But my mom made sure that we were in stuff. That was really important for her, especially because when she was growing up, you know, like, a lot of my aunts and uncles are not chill with the fact that they're First Nations. And that was just because that was the culture at the time. It wasn't safe in a way. Mm-hmm. My mom, on the other hand, is very, very, very fiercely in love with her culture and her people and her history. She loved her mom and everything. And she's very, very proud to be First Nations. And she works with First Nations peoples doing stuff. And she's just really, like, I really admired that about her. And she fought really hard to make sure that me and my sisters knew that we were First Nations, which included us going to things like, the thing that the Lower Mainland does is that, like, students who are First Nations, they also have a First Nations counselor who sometimes takes them on special field trips. Mm-hmm. So we would often go to, like, ceremony, like powwows or potlatches and stuff. And the fun thing about being a little Native kid is getting to sit by all, like, the older, like, uncles or the grandpas or whatever and listen to the stories and how they would tell us all these stories. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. My sister, I have no idea how she just likes reading. That's probably it. She discovered Egyptian mythology. And so she'd read all these stories. And then she discovered Greek mythology and she'd read all these stories. And what she would do is she would, you know, I would sit at her feet, look up to her, and she would tell me these stories off the way that our elders told us stories at ceremony. And so that's kind of how I got into it. I kind of piggybacked off of my sister's obsession. Danae also was really excited because her name is Danae. and she learned who Danae was in Greek mythology. And she was like, oh, no. And I'm like, at least your, like, hero son isn't completely an idiot. Like, Perseus isn't the worst one to have. And she was like, I don't like it. Like, my mom then learned about the name. And she was like, that is not who I named my child after. So I just kind of, I was also a kid who read a lot. So I just read things all the time. Like, I think I don't even know. I just was reading all the time. So I don't even know how I, like, first learned about Sparta. I feel like it was a combination of Danae reading and me reading and stealing her books and reading her books. It's kind of just, I just stumbled upon it at some point.
Yeah.
I don't have a clear memory of it. I know definitely when I was younger, I believed it. That's sort of the thing everybody believes about it. And then at some point, it was pointed out to me how weird that is. And I was like, yeah.
Well, yeah. I guess.
Okay.
I guess that's what I'm so curious about. Because, like, I obviously, like, knew about Sparta and stuff before. But just, like, all the different, I guess, oh, I mean, I've been saying it nonstop in this series, but, like, all the different things that make them weird, I think are really heightened. Well, they are definitely really heightened and, like, emphasized in 300 in a really interesting way. And there will be another bonus episode where I'm sitting down with Ben of the Classical Studies Memes for Hellenistic Teens to talk about the movie 300 and all of its wild things. But I do think that, like, whether or not you obviously, I mean, think, rational humans do not believe everything that is in that movie because it is nonsense. Obviously, like, it is also super racist once you look at it later.
That's what I've heard. I've seen the clips and I'm like, how fun.
Yeah, it's like Orientalism in a movie.
Yeah, right.
But, like, even ignoring the really obvious problematic stuff, you get this idea of Sparta and it does seem, like, pretty realistic. And what's so interesting about it, like, not only that I think it did teach a lot of people what they think they know of Sparta, whether they believe it or not, like, what is fascinating about it is talking to people about it is, like, a lot of the stuff in Sparta itself is true, like, from the movie, is true to the extent of ancient sources, but not true to the extent of, like, objective archaeological truth. Which is so interesting. So, like, the movie and, like, the graphic novel that it is based on is really true to Plutarch and to Herodotus. Like, very, very true to them. Which is fascinating. But then, so that's what makes, I think, a lot of people think that the movie and the book are accurate. Because they work really heavily off of those two sources. But then, once you know, and you're like, well, that Herodotus and Plutarch didn't actually know what they were talking about much when it comes to Sparta. Obviously, Herodotus knew way more. Like, he had way more access points. He was actually from the right time period. Like, he was born during the Persian War or, like, 2 years after it or something.
Yeah, something like that. The generation before him would have been the people fighting in the war.
Exactly,
He interviewed and he spoke to them while writing.
Yeah. History. So he had like a lot of real access points, yeah. but because of the Sparta of it all, he got a lot of weird bullshit ideas. And so it is really interesting to think about it that way. And like, I don't want to talk too much with the movie, but as somebody who hasn't seen it, like, yeah, I was just so curious kind of like what you thought. I don't know.
I thought a lot of it. I think it seeped in to sort of my perception of Sparta. I've seen clips, you know, of course I've seen the Sparta memes and the little clips and whatever, because like, of course, but I honestly, like when I was doing research all this year, I was like, should I take a moment and like watch the movie and see what people think? Because I even like, I remember the one of the first things was like, what people think of Sparta and like, how true is that? How does that align with the Sparta in antiquity and reality? And I remember sitting there and I literally called my sister. I was like, hey, what do you think of when you think of Sparta? And like, I'm the idiot for asking her, because she was just like, oh, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, wait, never mind. You're not the person for me to ask because you've read about Sparta much. Right. Like, you don't care. So like, it seeps in. So I think I did have that sort of general, like, oh, they were probably pretty good warriors kind of thing. Not to the extent that they were. And so it was quite surprising going in. I'm just like, oh, look at these. Like, it ancient Greece pulled through, and they're just a bunch of stumbling little idiots, just like I love them to be. Like, I'm so happy that they just were like, because I mean, like, I think you mentioned in one of the podcasts, like, whenever you play Odyssey, you always side with Athens.
Oh, ages ago, I don't feel that way now.
Oh, okay, because now I think you.
Yeah, it must have been when I was first playing the game. Yeah,
I don't remember, but I remember hearing that being like, "How dare!" No, always Sparta. They're fun. They seem like they like to. I don't know. I think I would love to see a Spartan party, because I just heard what Athenian ones are like, and I want to know.
You would have never seen a Spartan party, Michaela. Those were made for dudes and only dudes. I don't even think the Spartans like had Hetera in there that we know of, right? Like, there was.
I bet they did. I feel like
they were way more dude focused. Even
I think they were helots. They were true slaves, but
yeah,
potentially. I mean, like, also because like. They all ate their meals together. Like, that's fun. But it was, like, all the men in the one group. Because it has that sense of, like, keeping everyone together and of the same mind and sort of and of having each other's backs in a way, like, you know.
Well, it's almost brainwashy, though, too. Like, yes! It's cult-like.
It's
like
indoctrination.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think that if you were to compare... Yeah. If you were to compare the things that like make a cult and make a cult successful to what Sparta did, like it is really specific. Like they intentionally kind of isolated them from their families. Mm-hmm. The men always had the dinner together with all the same men every single night. And it's like part of your culture. And it's really ingrained that like, if you are a Spartan, you do this, you know? And I think, yeah, they were probably the one of the most, if not the most culty of ancient Greek city states in terms of like being a Spartan and what that required and like what was expected of you, because there's no other where they were like, you had to provide for the state, you had to have a farm that gave the state what it needed, you could not work your farm, you had to have it run by helots, like all these different things that were so 100% required of you in order for you to be a Spartan. It's really interesting and unique.
But I always wonder like how much of that actually was the reality of the situation, because like I think that's definitely what the image we get and the idea we get, but like we don't get Spartan voices, so we hear the sort of like Spartan overall what was expected of them, but I wonder if it really was so stringent.
Yeah.
And like it's hard because on one hand it's like, yeah, that's why they were so short-lived, because
yeah,
how the hell is
like
that,
you can see the evidence of it.
Yeah, like,
exactly,
how is that, like it just doesn't
it
work.
Wasn't
it, no it, was... it just failed miserably and beautifully all at the same time. It was great. But like then it's like I wonder how much was like okay, just let them. You know, maybe he doesn't want to. Maybe he wants to go home for dinner tonight.
And we'll just yeah.
You know, like, I wonder what it was in practice.
Yeah.
And sort of some of the, because.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it was not, like, all, like, every single day without fail. But I do, yeah, I don't know. Like, from all the people, all the guests and stuff I've had on, it seems pretty well accepted that, like, nah, these parts of it were definitely, like, the things that made them weird.
Because they are very weird. Like, they're still yeah. very, like. Like, I've been trying to, like, how do I write this in a way that makes sense? Because I don't know how. But it's, like, when I was describing them as, like, they're not really, like, what you'd expect of the Greeks. It's, like, they are, and one, it's, like, you look at them and they are objectively Greek. Like, but they're also so just strange. So weird.
Well, yeah, and I think that's because... are the broad, like, cultural, at least definitely in North America, but I think broadly in, like, the quote-unquote Western world, the generally accepted, just way of understanding Greece is through Athens. It's yeah. entirely through an Athenian lens. Like, mm-hmm. you think of ancient Greece, you think of Athens. And, like, that's not, you know, that's in large part because of sourcing and because of the people that studied it for a very long time. And, you know, I think a lot of people are working to make it not all about Athens now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, everything we think about the quintessential idea of, like, an ancient Greek is 100% from Athens, from Athenian yeah. tragedy, from Athenian philosophy. It's all from Athens. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's quite unfortunate, isn't it?
I mean, and fascinating all the same.
Getting a little bored of Athens.
Yeah.
That's fine. No, man. I don't. And, you know, I think it's also people are looking at different periods too. Like, the classical period mm-hmm. has been studied enough.
No.
I was reading an article about, like, archaic Sparta. Like, who were they before the reputation came along? And it was very interesting. I was really enjoying it. And it was a lot about just, like, song culture. And I'm like, ah, musical theater kids. That's just what I'm going to see now. Just
no theater, though. Dancing. Music storytelling kids, but they didn't do the theater thing.
Yeah, but, I mean, I'm dating a musical theater kid. The amount of times he just, like, sings and, like, stares at me while singing. Music. And I'm like, please, please stop. I can't stand it. Oh my god, I don't know how he puts up with me. But yeah, they were very, very different. Like, they were all just, like, more about singing and song, and of course, like, exercise, because, like, anywhere
they love to exercise.
Always exercise. Yeah, but that's also the time period when they went in and annexed Messenia. Mm-hmm. So it's like, what's going on there? Like, why did they make, and it was most probably resources, man. Like, they lived in a pretty fertile place. They could grow some food, but in general, also, Greece was just bad at food production.
Yeah, yeah, you needed kind of everything.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah. It's hard to find food, and you need to feed a growing population.
Which well, it wasn't growing for long.
Oh, no, and then it just, like, went downhill, and they were just like, no, we're still Sparta, guys, and they're not, and then everyone comes in, and they're like, oh my god, they're so cute, and they're like, fear us, poking them with little pins. Oh, silly.
So, what is like, the most fun, I guess, most exciting thing you learned researching all of this?
Oh my god, most exciting.
Fun. Yeah, like, and then I'll also ask you what's the weirdest, so don't feel like you have to pull out the weirdest now.
Have you looked at Laconian art?
No.
Artifacts, pottery.
Ooh, is it weird?
It's so cool. It's not super, it's still, like, you still look at it and you're like, yes, that's Greek pottery, but it's a bit different. Like, Athens was very good at their pottery and their drawing, so we get all those because they're very pretty, but then you look at the Laconian stuff and you're like, what the and I want to put the pictures of them in the promo, but I'm like, I can't find a good place for them that isn't sketchy, but, like, it's just, it's so interesting.
Yeah, if you want to send me pictures, I'll just post them too.
Yeah, I can do that. I'll write that.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really interesting. No, I like really need to get further into the Peloponnese in one of my visits. But it's not easy to do unless you're driving, and I don't do that.
Yeah,
so I've only Yeah, I've only been as far as Nafplio, which is not far enough, but it is in the Argolid. So I've at least been through the Argolid. And I could see... Yeah, I could. You could, from Nafplio, you can see the Spartan Peninsula. So you can see like Taietos and stuff, which is cool. At least I thought it was Taietos. You can see big ass mountains. So in my head, I was like, "That's Taietos. It's fine."
Yeah, it's somewhere over there in that general direction.
Yeah, big ass mountains in the Peloponnese.
I know modern Sparta has a museum. They hold a lot of stuff in there. So
yeah, I need to go there and Olympia.
Yeah, I just need to go to Greece again. Yeah. Last time I was there, I was, 17? And I was with my mom.
Very different. Yeah. That was the first time I went to. Very different.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together. We'll cry together and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
No, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
Each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
Like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
To the listener, we just talked about a bunch of random stuff and then cut it out. So we're pulling it back to talk about, like, I mean, yeah, I guess early Sparta, Bronze Age, and then also, like, maybe Homeric Sparta. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like, yeah, what do you, I mean, Bronze Age everything, so just share whatever you want. Bronze Age life.
I love I love the Bronze Age.
It's fucking fascinating.
Death. Can we do the Bronze Age next? I would love to.
It's so good. It's just the sourcing, man. But yeah, if you can handle all of that, do it up.
And I'll do better this time because I'm highly critical of everything I do. And I can point out every little thing that I don't like how I did. In fact, I know, like, one of my things is I'm going to be starting to write the episodes from the beginning of research.
Yeah. That's the big thing that I do with the mythology, but like also because this is the first time we've really dived into history, like I didn't really know what the best way was to do it either.
Yeah,
one of the big things for me and why, like, every time people are like, so how can you build up, you know, how can you take more off of your plate in terms of the podcast? And I'm like, look, the number one time consuming thing is script writing, and I'm not going to give that up because it's like my whole personality. And it's like, I can't just get somebody to research because there's no point. They're going to do a ton of work that I'm not going to use because I read the myth and I write the script all in one moment, stream of consciousness nonsense. And so, like, it just has to happen this way because that's how it works. And yeah, I mean, I think doing the research while writing, in hindsight, yeah, is a smart way
especially
of doing it.
Especially for things in terms of, like, the areas of, like, Greece, studying Greece that I excel at a bit more compared to, because, like, quite frankly, you are a bit much better at the mythology research than I am. You don't give yourself enough credit. I'm going to say that. Like,
oh god, no, I'm fucking queen of mythology. Thank you. Oh, I'm happy to give myself that credit. Oh my god, are you kidding?
But no, like when it comes to like history and stuff, like that's where I am so happy to like read about that shit. And I'm like, I just gotta start writing it from the beginning because then what happens is when you're ready to dive into it, it's all written there and you get to just go look at everything and read it all and then you change it into your voice. And it's just so much easier instead of us both sitting here going, ah.
Oh my god, please. I know. This has been so much more difficult than I thought it was going to be.
I've cried just a little bit.
So have I. Do not worry. I also, the number one thing I've learned, and we're going to work it into next year, and I'm happy for the listeners to hear this because I think this behind the scenes is weird and interesting, but like, we are not doing it in January. Like, why I ever think that the darkest, saddest months right after the holidays, like why I think that that is the best time to do a research heavy episode series where I completely step out of my comfort zone of mythology and I try to sound like I know what I'm talking about. Like, why I keep thinking that January is the time to do that is so far beyond me. I have such bad seasonal depression. The holidays took everything out of me. I don't know how to be creative, let alone creative about something that is out of my realm. Like, oh my god, I want to scream.
So when will we do it then, just for my own,
like, maybe March? But maybe we'll it'll be like March or April, maybe April, because April doesn't have, well, yeah, it's second quarter. The only reason I changed it is that March is Women's History Month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for my themes, we'll do it April. April will be our month for big
January
series.
January will be sad, depressing month. We just put all the sad stories and we can just cry while working on them.
Yeah. Or I just do like some more rears because sometimes I just want to cry.
I'm straight so up tired. In like a class introduction, they're like, tell us about your favorite hobbies, and I was like, knitting,
what are those?
Video games, crying, knitting. Like, it's me.
Oh my god. Yeah, no, it's, I mean, it's such a struggle. And then also, like, the thing that keeps coming out of these special series, and particularly this one, where like I want to share everything, but also I obviously can't, and I still don't have the brain space or the time to do, like, I can work with all the research you've given me, but I still can't even like refer to all of it because you found so much. I don't have time to look at all of it. And then also like these scripts end up so much longer than my traditional scripts. Every episode that normally would be 30 minutes is at least 45. Like that means that a script that would normally be like max 5,000 words are all like creeping on 7,000 words. And it's just like it has been a trial. It's worth it. I'm fascinated. I love Sparta. I hope people are enjoying it, but I also am ready for to be done. I was already looking at, because I'm having such bad writer's block, I was like, okay, maybe I can work on like a future episode, like what is a really fun myth that I want to tell, like what would give me joy in a way that I have not experienced it in a while, like what would bring me joy, and I can't think of anything right now, but I need to find joy. No, where did it go?
It's all gone. It doesn't exist anymore. No, that's fair. Right. Yeah, I'm going to go back to the Bronze Age.
Right. We were talking about the Bronze Age. Oh, my God.
Because I love the Bronze Age. And that's also the thing that I find really interesting about Sparta is, like, one could argue Sparta is present in Bronze Age. At least
for sure.
Peloponnesian peoples were much more present in the Bronze Age than others.
Than the rest of the mainland.
And that's, and like that is where they get sort of like their cultural sort of mythological understanding of themselves, right? Like you get the Homeric epics, which, you know, does this point to a society that they were at any point? I don't think so, but to a degree, especially when you look at like Mycenae and Mycenaean culture, like it's fascinating. I love Mycenae. It's my favorite.
I've been to Mycenae. It's the most incredible thing ever. Oh my God.
Oh my God. Yeah. No, it
was unbelievable.
It was, it's so pretty, man. And I don't know if the cistern is open anymore. It's still open. I walked down into it. Just a wee 17.
It's dark and smelly. I love
it's
it.
Life. It was great.
Yeah.
I love dark places. like, because they're fascinating. They're so interesting, and they're present. And then, you know, our other Bronze Age Greek civilizations, other than, like, you know, we have the people of, like, the Cycladic Islands, but then we have the Minoans, and they're so different.
Mm-hmm.
You can't, like, you can't really tie Athens to, like, Mycenae in the way that you can tie Sparta to Mycenae. And then certainly when you read, like, the Iliad and Homeric epic, Sparta's right there. Like, front and center is the main character. It's the theme in the Iliad. Not theme. You know what I mean. Like, she's right there. And
she's
what is it? Where's Athens? Just a little brief mention somewhere. What is it? In, like, the catalog of ships? Just
briefly. It's only, there's one, there's, like, just a passing reference in the catalog of ships. And I actually, when I spoke to Joel Christensen, who studies Homer, he suggested that it also, that could have been, like, a later edition when it was actually written down. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because, like, they really, there was not nothing in Athens in the Bronze Age, but there was, like, very little compared to the rest of the Greek world.
Yeah, and Athens is interesting because it's one of the, like, because it wasn't Mycenaean.
It wasn't Mycenaean. I mean, I think that also,
Athens was Mycenaean. It was the Acropolis straight up has, like, a Mycenaean cistern on it. That was their, their city.
Whoa. Okay, thought what? That I, like, so I learned a thing, and it's absolutely wild, and I keep forgetting to, like, ever mention it, let alone
that's
to
fair.
You. But did you know that Linear B, I think it was Linear B and not A. Ooh, I gotta figure it out now. Maybe it was A. I know, but it'd be cooler if it was A. Because one of the two was found all the way on Samothrace. Yes. That's the face that we want here for the listener at home.
A
face.
Okay.
Linear. And Samothrace is the furthest island, modern Greek island in the northeast. It is so far from the places that were predominantly using linear A and linear B. So far in the middle of the ocean, it's tiny. Mm-hmm. So there was not a big Bronze Age presence there at all because it's tiny. It would be so much work. But linear A or B has been found there. And they did have like a pretty big archaic and classical presence. It was enormous in the Hellenistic period, though. So that's the other thing, is that it was biggest in the Hellenistic period, which is so late. But one of those two languages, I wish I remembered which, has been found there in like a hole, I think, too. Like it was like there's this archaeological site that like you can't really access because it's in the they have a military base there because it's close to Turkey.
Yeah.
And so I forget that I talked to a bunch of archaeologists there and they were telling me all about this. But yes, one of the two languages.
I just Googled it. Outside of Crete, Cretan hieroglyphic writing.
So linear A.
Has thus far been found only on the island of Samothrace in the northern Aegean Sea.
Ah, right? Okay, wait. But that can't be linear A then. If there's,
no, that'd be Minoan hieroglyphics. That's the before.
Did they have before linear A?
Jesus Christ.
Oh my God. Well, linear A then was also found there because
it must.
I know
have,
it was
because...
one of the linears. But like Samothrace, it is tiny.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That is fucking crazy.
Wait, yeah, and so far, like it's so far from Crete.
In addition to over 30 locations on Crete, objects with linear A have been found on the Greek mainland, in Palestine and Egypt, on Kythera, the Cyclades, and Samothrace.
Okay.
As well as in Western Asia Minor.
That's fucking
that
amazing.
Is
oh my
fucking
God.
Cool. Do we leave that in?
Yes, absolutely. Are you kidding? I learned that. I learned that and I remember it blew my mind so hard. Like everything I learned on Samothrace, but like I was like, holy fuck. And then I just kept forgetting to like share it ever. So I'm very glad.
That's fair. Yes. So the Acropolis was a Mycenaean citadel at some point.
Amazing.
At least from my knowledge.
So do we kind of just generally use the term Mycenaean to refer to all Bronze Age
mainland
in that region?
Greece.
Yeah,
mainland
okay.
Greece. They did get to Crete. So they did sort of
No,
take
I know
over
they
the
did cuz they like
but that's
yeah.
Late. Yeah, that's towards
I
the
more
end.
Mean like do we know of other Bronze Age like cultures that we wouldn't call Mycenaean that were on the mainland. In that area or
not that I know of, not that I'm
yeah,
aware
okay.
of. Yeah, okay. Because yeah, the like it was pretty typical for Mycenaean peoples to like build their citadels on high places because you could see around you, it was more easier to defend.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that in like I think it is like the late 12th century, you see a lot more fortification of Mycenaean sites, which you know suggests that there's some shit going on they're worried about.
Yeah.
And you know it blows up. But this is what I was going to say about Mycenaean Athens is the one of the few, it could be the only or it could be one of the few Mycenaean sites that stays active throughout the Iron Ages and into the Archaic period. Like they're still there doing stuff. And it's because most Mycenaean sites aren't rehabilitated. Like, you know, nobody lives in Mycenae. It's not a bad place to live, but nobody lived there afterwards.
Well, that's what's so interesting about learning about the mythology of the Peloponnese and this idea of the Heraclidae, right? And like the return of the children of Heracles with the Dorians and this idea of a Dorian invasion, Dorian migration, what have you, like, is their way of using mythology to explain the historical thing that happened, which is that, yeah, like, the palaces fell into disuse and we don't really understand why. And clearly they registered, not necessarily, like, they didn't give it a why that they didn't use the palaces, but they give a why to at least the idea of like different people coming in and displacing or removing the people that had built the palaces.
Yes. And the thing that's interesting then, I think, is the discourse between Athens and Sparta, especially because when you think of like Athens' founding myth about the I'm terrible with names. Erechtheion. Right?
I always forget if it's Erechtheus or Erechthonius that starts it, but one of the two. Yeah.
One of them.
The snake dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. And them being autochthonous. They're from the earth. And they were there before the Dorians came in. And then they sort of look at Sparta and they're like, well, you're the descendants of those people who came in. So you're not actually of here. And then there was like that
whereas the Achaeans also thought of themselves as being autochthonous. I don't know their myth about it, But they were like, no, not only are we a Tacthonist, we are older than everybody else, which is fascinating.
And then when you like look at that in comparison with like, especially like Orestes, like I think it was the episode, it was yesterday's episode, today, what day is it? It's Friday. Never mind.
What is time?
What is time but a flip that constantly flips?
But yeah, the promo you did for our episode with Maria Pressler.
Yeah, so that of him being before everything. So it's like you can make some claim with that. And it's just, you know, because like the Homeric and the old stories and the mythology, that is, I mean, like I come from a culture that is myth-based. You know what I mean? Like our history, our stories, our way of view in life is told through myth. I describe it as like I grew up in myth. So like I understand the impact of that and the importance of that. You understand where you are in the world based on these stories that you are told and are passed down. Mm-hmm. But they get changed all the time because everyone has a different way of telling things. Mm-hmm. But it's just so interesting that for Sparta, their story has them coming in.
They do have all these other little workarounds, though, because in addition to what you're talking about with the conversation with Maria Pretzler, is I just recorded this mythology one, and I was referring to, I have this like big book on Heracles. Uh-huh. It did not have anything on the Heraclida, which I found to be hilarious.
What?
But no, I have this. Yeah, I know. I have this book called Heracles by Emma Stafford. Uh-huh. And it had a lot of great stuff on the Heraclida, thankfully. But basically, they have all these different kind of workarounds to account for the fact that they are and are not a Tacthonist, basically. Like, so the Orestes thing was interesting. I didn't find like references to that beyond the conversation I had. Obviously, I trust her, though. She knows what she's talking about. But essentially, the other kind of workarounds are this idea that like, so Heracles, you know, it's interesting even that Heracles has some kind of tie to the Peloponnese. I've yet to figure out exactly how they figure that out, because like, he's from Thebes, but like whatever.
And Heracles is everywhere, like you see Heracles, well, exactly, like
it's like it doesn't matter because like, Heracles,
and he, I mean, if you like comparative mythology is really interesting, you can find figures like Heracles, and so like this like trope of this kind of figure, you find them in like almost all mythology system, and especially in the Indo-European one, like you can see them. I mean, Thor is essentially Heracles. And I don't know the Indian pantheon very well, but they have a Heracles figure too, and it's anyways, Heracles is all continue.
Well, that's the thing, and he's kind of all that mattered, and so basically it seems to me that like the idea is that like, you know, so he was born in Thebes, and his mortal father, so like he is the son of Zeus, but he obviously like had a mortal father too, who's married to his mother, Amphitryon. And Amphitryon gets like kicked out of Thebes, and he goes and he like seems to take over Tiryns in the Peloponnese, and then he's overthrown, and so it, like a bunch of different things happen, but that this seems to be like the kind of tenuous link to the Peloponnese. But basically that is all to get around to, there is this like idea that, okay, so we want to be both children of Heracles and at least in maybe not literally a Tacthonist, but like always there kind of thing. So they have this idea that Heracles installed Tyndareus,
okay,
like as a friend. And so then you get this connection between Heracles and Tyndareus, who then gives you the connection between everybody else, so that like, sure, Helen and Menelaus aren't necessarily related to the Heracles myth, but we have this way of like connecting them. But then the other means of understanding the Heraclidae, and I couldn't figure out exactly how this worked, but basically there's like a... there's some sourcing on when the children of Heracles come down to like retake the Peloponnese. At some point in the fighting, Orestes' grandson dies. And so, yeah, but then, so I couldn't tell which side he was on. So I'm like, are you saying he's like with the children of Heracles, so you're linking that, or are you saying he's one of the ones who's like killed when they come in, which you would think they wouldn't want to do that, because then that would be negating the connection to like Helen and Menelaus and Agamemnon.
But like, if Orestes' grandson had no children himself, no direct heir, there could be an argument for, well, our grandpapa put your grandpapa on the throne and now you're gone, so now we shall take the throne. Like, I guess either.
Well, it's that, and though, if you make that, that's exactly the point that they're making, but with a different connection, which is that, like, no, yeah, the idea is that they killed off that line by killing Orestes' grandson. But what that does is negates the curse too, right? So, like, by doing that and, like, explicitly connecting with but and ending the line of Agamemnon at all, then you are getting an end to my favorite curse to talk about, because I like to give it all of its names. So, yep, you know, the Tantalid curse, and then the curse of the Pelopidae, and then the curse on the house of Atreus. You get to end all of that with this kind of connection, and it's like further connection to Heracles, because, like, yeah, like we're saying, ultimately, as long as you have a connection to Heracles, like, it doesn't actually matter the rest of the story. And it's why, like, there's no details in any of it. It's just like, Heracles came here. Am I going to tell you when or why or how? No.
He was just here.
He was here, and that makes us cool.
I love them so much. That's so silly. Yeah, I mean, I think also that it makes sense. Like, Heracles is sort of like the every Greek's hero, too. Mm-hmm. Like, he's so Greek.
Yeah, I mean, he, as long as you have a connection to Heracles, no matter where you are in Greece, like, you have this, exactly. Like, you're Greek, you're important, you're, like, kind of have this sort of divine, like, I've talked a lot about in this myth episode, this idea of, like, basically being the children of Heracles gives them, like, divine right to the land, regardless of being a Tocsinist. And it's, like, he is divine, and he's not divine, but ultimately he is. Like, he is still the only hero that ever becomes, like, fully god. Yeah, I don't know. It is just generally interesting. I am broadly so fascinated by Heracles and the way that, like, everyone wanted to be connected with him in some way. And, like, the lengths
of him.
They did. And then the lengths that they would go to get that piece is always entertaining. And, like, it always feels like such a tenuous, like, stretched out thread just to be like, but Heracles.
He's one of us. I promise he's one of you. Yeah, and I mean, then he gets adopted into so many different things, and he's one of those ones that sticks out to everyone. Even now, everyone knows him, Hercules now. But, like, Sparta figures so much in sort of, like, the Panhellenic myths of, like, Homer. Like, these huge, like, the Iliad is huge, and everything leading up to it, and Helen, and everyone. Like, Penelope is, like, from the area. Like, it's,
I know,
so...
they're so connected with, like,
yes,
I mean, it's like, you have to think about Homer not as a myth. You have to think about it in the way they thought about it, which is that, like, it was basically history.
Their history.
Like,
it was their history.
They really, and so it's not like any other myth. Like, I compared it to Theseus in this episode, in my myth episode, because, like, that is the difference, right? Like, Spartans are descended of the heroes of the Trojan War.
Yes.
The Athenians, they've got Theseus, like, get out of here. That's nowhere near as impressive. And so I also think that, like, for all the autochthony gets you, they it doesn't ultimately matter. They just be like, well, that's fine. Like, sure, we're not autochthonous, but we've got Heracles and Menelaus on our side. So, like, it doesn't even matter. Like, it completely negates any need for autochthony, because our origins are the origins of the entire Greek world. The language, everything is tied up in Homer. And so it inherently is, like, the most important connection you can possibly have to your culture.
Mm-hmm. And how big a deal Helen was, too. Like,
yes,
other cultures, other cities would look at, well, we know where Athens looked at her. And then it's like, yeah, who was, because, like, she was a big fucking deal in Sparta. They had the Menelaon. And, you know, it's probably where they went and, like, worshipped Menelaus and Helen. And, like, they had, like, a certain, like, ceremony specifically to do with Helen as well.
Well, and they think that
fucking deal.
She was a huge deal. And they also think that the Menelaon was built over top of an original temple that was just to Helen.
Yeah.
In the time when they would worship ladies a little bit more.
Yeah. And then Euripides Helen is interesting because mm-hmm. He's writing that towards the end of the Peloponnesian War when Athens is getting their butt kicked. Like, Athens is not in a great position at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that Helen, it's such a kind treatment of Helen. And mm-hmm. there was an article of it. I think I sent it to you and I was like, you have to read this. This is fascinating. But it pointed out, like, is there a little bit of like trying to soften some opinions towards them? They're being like, hey, Helen, she didn't do what we said she did. She was in Egypt the whole time being a good wife. She was good. Like,
no cheating at all.
Just trying to ingratiate themselves a little bit with them. They're like, no, anything we said about her before in the past, she wasn't a lying, cheating whore. She was a good woman. Like, it's so fascinating to think about. But man, Sparta.
I know. I like them.
Yeah. But I need a Sparta break once this is all done. If anyone,
oh my god, I know.
Smarter to me, I'm just gonna like pterodactyls scream in their face.
I'm gonna try to find the most fun, like silly myth to get straight into. Yeah, I'm with
that'd
you.
That'd be good. Yeah, because I don't have to get started on research for next year.
You don't have to start right away. You can take your time. I'm not worried. So. What? Yeah. Is there anything else that you want to talk about? In terms of Sparta and what you learned or whatever? I mean, this has already been a chill episode, so we also don't need to. But I want to give you that space.
It's fair. No. Man.
Yeah.
I just, like, you know what? I was like, I loved Sparta going into it. And I was like, how am I going to feel about them coming out of it? I still fucking love them, man.
Yeah.
I just see them as so much more ridiculous than I first originally thought. Which is what I hope, like, you know, I hope people take from it is, like, first of all, don't take everything so, you know, don't take it all too seriously. It can be fun a bit. Some things are not fun. There
we
are
will
some
see
things
how much
Sparta.
That, yeah. Not
there are some things that, you know, aren't fun. And, you know, like, learning, do you know, it's the thing. Learning is fun. If you learned something and it changed the way you viewed the thing before, don't be disappointed. Be happy. Because now you get to take joy in it in a different way. And isn't that lovely and wonderful? Because I would never have looked at them and been like, man, these idiots stumbled into so many wonderful things.
Oh my god, I know. It's throughout
their whole vein. It's like, it's just like, it's a level of genius that's only like, you didn't do it. Like,
yeah.
It's like, I don't.
It's not quite genius, but it's something fascinating.
Divine genius. Like, it's just like
giving them even more credit.
But it's just like, right place, right time, maybe, too. Like, that's, mm-hmm. and it's, and good PR teams, man. Wow. Very good PR teams. And, you know, it's just, it's fun. I love it. I love ancient Greece is fun.
You like it?
I like it just a little bit. Just a touch.
Yeah. I'm a kind of a fan.
Just on a scale of 1 to 10, at least. 6.4.
I'm like broadly, I think like vaguely interested, you know, in ancient Greece, I would say.
I'm interested enough.
Yeah, I mean, my sarcasm came through there. This is a free and loose episode. It's also thankfully like my good way of like getting back into talking to other humans because I'm realizing as I say this that next week I have to talk to Natalie Haynes. So I'm very
oh my
glad
god!
Yeah, that she wasn't day one. In any case, listeners, let's keep all this in. Enormous thanks to Michaela who just screeched at the news. She knows I was recording this. I'm not sure why she's quite as surprised.
I didn't know it was next week. I knew it was coming, yeah. But I didn't know when it was.
Yeah,
just wave at her for me. She doesn't know who I am.
I will wave at her. Thank you, Michaela, for joining me to talk wild Spartan ridiculousness. Do you want to tell my listeners? Do you want them to follow you anywhere, or do you want to stay
only on Twitter?
You're not secret now, but
you
okay,
cannot.
Great.
Here's the thing: I'll say if you try to follow me on Instagram. Because my account is private, I will delete the request.
Good, smart. I wish I had gone private years ago.
Yeah, well, you can forcefully have people unfollow you.
I'm not going to do that. And also, I have 12,000, Michaela.
Okay. Well, this is like on like my private account. You can follow me on Twitter. Yeah, yeah. Account is fine. Occasionally, I'll like tweet something. I don't pay attention to the internet.
And is it just Pythia Wannabe or is there? Yeah. Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure. There was like underscores
Pythia
or anything.
Wannabe. Yeah, I think so.
Wonderful. Well, we'll put it in the episode's description as always.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this. This was very fun.
Yeah.
Your first appearance on the show.
Oh God.
Ugh, you wonderful nerds. If you hung around through that entire conversation, then I absolutely love you. Needless to say, we lacked in structure, but it was fun, and I figured you all just might be interested in how we've been doing this series. How Michaela and I work together, now that I'm no longer an entirely one-woman operation. Michaela is also the face behind all the lovely promo videos that I post on social media, and as you hear me say after every episode, she also runs the YouTube, which we're working to build up so that it contains captions of the podcast for greater accessibility. And, well, other than the very fascinating conversations I'll be having about the poet Alcman next week, this Sparta series is officially over. I cannot quite believe how much I have learned about Sparta and also about what I've learned about planning a research series of this podcast, which was primarily, don't do it in January, Liv. Honestly, what on earth were you thinking? It's the worst possible month to have to do something that is so much harder than a regular job. But yeah, if you caught that in the episode, or if I kept it in because I'm questioning myself, but we will probably be covering the Bronze Age next. Bronze Age and its so-called collapse. That will be the next big special research series, and it will be a good one. Not for a long while, though, because back to mythology we go. Mythology and comedy? Stay tuned. Before long, I will be diving into our third ever Aristophanes play. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is written and produced by me, Liv Albert. Michaela Smith, as you just heard her in all her glory, is the Hermes to my Olympians and handles so many podcast-related things, from running the YouTube to creating promotional images and videos to editing, and in the case of Sparta, holy gods, all the research. The podcast is hosted and monetized by iHeartMedia. Help me continue bringing you the world of Greek mythology and the ancient Mediterranean by becoming a patron, where you will get bonus episodes and more. Visit patreon.com/mythsbaby or click the link in this episode's description. Thank you all for listening and for coming along for this wild and wonderful series on ancient Sparta. Whew, I am Liv and I love this shit.
Guess what, Mango?
What's that, Will?
So iHeart is giving us a whole minute to promote our podcast, Part-Time Genius.
I know. That's why I spent my whole week composing a haiku for the occasion. It's about my emotional journey in podcasting over the last 7 years, and it's called Earthquake House.
Mango, I'm going to cut you off right there. Why don't we just tell people about our show instead?
Yeah, that's a better idea. So every week on Part-Time Genius, we feed our curiosity by answering the world's most important questions. Things like, when did America start dialing 911? Is William Shatner's best acting work in Esperanto? Also, what happened to Esperanto?
Plus, we cover questions like, how Chinese is your Chinese food? How do dollar stores stay in business? And of course, is there an Illuminati of cheese?
There absolutely is, and we are risking our lives by talking about it. But if you love mind-blowing facts, incredible history, and really bad jokes, make your brains happy and tune in to Part-Time Genius.
Listen to Part-Time Genius on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark.
I'm Greg.
I'm Brendan.
And this is a trailer for a new podcast called Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey.
It's about screenwriting.
And a journey. The three of us play aspiring screenwriters on a quest to get a hit Hollywood script to famous producer Dutch Huxley.
Well, I would say one of us is aspiring and the other two are sort of struggling.
Which one of us is aspiring?
No, they're going to have to listen to the podcast.
But I don't know, and I made the podcast.
Well, I made the podcast, and I think you guys were along for the ride.
Each week, we bring in a script, we read it, and then we give each other notes.
And you'll also hear about our adventures navigating the Hollywood system.
The show features amazing guests like Tim Robinson, Lily Sullivan, Weird Al Yankovic, and Rob Hubel.
And like any great blockbuster, it's filled with heartbreak, adventure, suspense, and just a little tasteful nudity.
And some distasteful nudity.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that, guys.
Listen to Get It to Dutch, A Screenwriter's Journey on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.